Welcome to the Pictures of Lily podcast, Vintage Edition. I'm your host, Lily Moyeri. I have been a music journalist since 1992, and I interview a lot of music-related people. Originally, this podcast was about my experience behind the story, what my experience was doing the interviews, just to give you a snapshot of what it's like on the other side of the digital recorder. Since 2024, we've shifted to the Pictures of Lily podcast Vintage Edition format, where I'm sharing my experiences about specific interviews with the bonus of original audio from the artists in those interviews. These interviews pull from my 34-year archive, many of which are recorded on cassette tape. In fact, this month marks the anniversary of my very first piece of writing getting published. Pictures of Lily. Thank you, everyone, for tuning into the Pictures of Lily podcast, Vintage Edition. This is Year 7, Episode 107. We publish monthly with a new episode posting on the second Wednesday of each month. You can find us on every platform by going to picturesoflily.com, where you can subscribe or follow us and also connect to us on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Pandora, Amazon, and Audible. Although it's really best to listen to the podcast straight from the source at picturesoflily.com, as it is the highest quality audio and avoids copyright restrictions. This episode is my only interview with Lily Allen at the time of her debut album, All Right Still, when she was touring North America in 2007.
When you first left me, I was wanting more, but you were fucking that girl next door. What'd you do that for?
Here are a few snapshots of my interview with Lily Allen. The interview took place on May 15th, 2007, almost exactly 19 years ago. I was scheduled to interview Lily after her soundcheck at the Wiltern Theater here in Los Angeles. She had just turned 22, and while she was wise in a lot of ways, she was also inexperienced in more ways. I could see the pitfalls coming and I felt protective of her, but I knew that she was not in a place where she would take any advice from anyone, particularly not an American journalist. Here is the interview in its entirety.
I think I should start taking my interview.
Why? To make sure about what you said?
No, just when people misspoke me, I can put up the recording on the blog.
That's not a bad idea. It's just a pain in the ass to go back and find it, but that's not a bad idea.
Yeah. Great. This is, I come to the end of throwing my album.
No, it's not the end. It's not here anyway.
Yeah.
Where should I start? So I just heard the album for the first time this morning. Because, you know, I'm like, where's the album? Where are you going to send this to me? Are you guys going to send this to me? This is for, like, months. So I'm driving, and I'm almost crashing. I'm laughing so hard. And I'm like, oh, no wonder people have been talking about this. Okay. Just, like, nobody's quoted it to me. And I'm like, why am I not getting quotes from this album? Yeah. Like, this line, that
I think
line.
People get enough quotes from me directly.
It's kind of hysterical. So are these all personal?
Yeah.
Every single one is something that happened to you, or?
More or less, yeah, mm-hmm. Or based on something that's happened to me.
Okay. Because I've noticed that there's a little bit of a trend towards that, especially with British stuff, not necessarily a certain kind of musical style, but a more observational kind of.
Yeah, person. I think there's a lot of kind of like social commentary going on in the UK at the moment.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I think I get asked this quite a lot, and I think it's probably. You know how when people write love songs, it's because they feel, you know, they've probably just got out, of, you know, come out of a relationship, and it's something they feel very strongly about, and they can, it's very fresh in their mind, and they can, you know, do word associations with their way that they're feeling, and it kind of translates very well to people. And I think the whole kind of social commentary thing, especially in the UK, is because as a young person in Britain, personally, I'm like very angry with the way that the world is going and the way that my country's being run and, you know, the kind of people that people are turning into. And, you know, I think that that's a feeling a lot amongst lots of young people. And I think that, you know, most kind of bands that are fresh coming out of the UK are pretty young and angry about the situation at the moment, just generally.
That's interesting. Because that seemed to never be the case before. It seemed to always be just love songs or whatever. Yeah. And now it's all.
I think you did. I think like in the days of like the Sex Pistols and the Clash.
Way back.
And even, you know, like, you know, the Rolling Stones, I think there was some kind of like political feeling that was going on in the country at that time that people were very angry about, and so, you know, all those songs came from that angry place. Mm-hmm. Even if they weren't particularly angry songs, it's like people have so much to say about what's going on at that time. You know, and I think with the, you know, the kind of like 80s and 90s booms, you know, the kind of capitalism, you know, our generation are a product of that, and I don't think we really want to be anymore. You know, we don't. I certainly didn't like having McDonald's adverts thrown in my face from the age of, well, being born.
Yeah, but I had them too. I just took them as a matter of course.
Yeah, I think it's just it's like, I think it's more, you know, probably like when my, you know, my mum always says, you know, it must be so hard for kids these days, because, you know, when she was young, you know, she went outside to play. Mm-hmm. You know, with your neighbours, and there was a sense of community.
Uh-huh.
There was a sense of community, and people were, you know, people knew their neighbours, and, you know, now it's so different. It's like people, you know, there's, whether people like it or not, there's a very kind of like cultural underlying of people, you know, feeling anger towards, you know, Muslims in our country, and people, you know, there's the whole kind of like thing of, you know, every news program is, oh, this black person's gone in and shot somebody, so all the white people are scared of the black people, all the black people are scared of the Muslims, and blah, blah, blah. And it's like no one wants to talk to each other anymore. And because it's been such a kind of cultural melting pot, and all those people have been forced to grow up in one place together, it's like no one talks to each other. You know, like, I don't know my neighbors' names, I don't know who they are. And I think it's the, you know, the same up and down, you know, the country. And I think we don't. You know, as a result of that, as a result of not communicating with those people and not playing on the street with your neighbours, you know, you're staying in and watching TV or playing computer games, and that's all being on the internet. And I think that's where the kind of problem, if it is a problem, is. I think that, you know, people don't interact with each other anymore.
Yeah. When I was waiting for the interview outside before the lunch show, just loads of freaks just start to knock me. Mm-hmm. Just on my leg. Because, you know, I mean, I don't know if you know LA or not, but we're not like in touch with the ground at all. Mm-hmm. We're like in our cars and completely separate from each other. And even if you're standing in line at Starbucks or whatever, you're not talking to each other.
Yeah.
You're just purposely like avoiding eye contact. It's just what people do. And it's funny because whenever I go to another city, I start out that way until I realize, okay, nobody's trying to avoid eye contact with you. You're avoiding eye contact with everyone. You can make eye contact.
Well, no, it's that elevated thing, isn't it? It's like,
yeah.
It's like as soon as you're all forced to stand in one place together, it starts to feel really awkward. Mm-hmm. Like, it's okay if you're on the street because you can just walk away. But when you're in an elevator, it's like, get away from me. I don't want to talk to you.
Ask me about the gig and ask me what the music is about.
Yeah, and then if someone is friendly, everyone else looks like, shut up. Yeah.
One, two. Didn't even look like two. Looked a little bit like a man.
Okay.
No, not right here. Not there. I couldn't concentrate. You got one nail there that, like, worked out everything. But I don't know how much
food. But I think that is, you know, the sentiment definitely in English pop culture and music culture at the moment is, like, people don't want to... People that are into music, which is, you know, quite a lot of people... throughout the world, I don't think people really want to see people taking their clothes off and doing dance routines anymore, because they're just over it. They're like, you know what, this is what I've been fed for the past 10 years, and I really don't want my life to be like that. And so they're done. Move on.
Yeah.
They write songs about how other shit
is. Well, what's interesting to me is that my whole life I haven't really listened to lyrics, which everybody's like, what are you listening to then? I'm like, oh no, I listen to the whole thing.
Yeah.
I'm like, the lyrics are, I just listen to the way they move, not to what they're saying. And I've noticed in the last 3 or 4 years, I'm all of a sudden, I know lyrics to songs and because they're saying
something.
You know, and it's, with your stuff, I have the melody stuck in my head, but I know the words. And this is only for this. And a couple of times this afternoon, so I just like, wow, that's saying something. So maybe they weren't saying anything before, that's why it wasn't really...
Yeah, I don't think they were. I think, you know, record companies, you know, suddenly... No, I always think it's amazing when you hear like old Minnie Riperton records, or, you know, Aretha Franklin, or any of those kind of greats, and you listen to the songs, you're like, why the fuck do people not write songs like this anymore? Like all that big sounding stuff with all the, you know, orchestra sounds and amazing piano players and electric guitar. I mean, it's all, you know, so many different aspects to songs, and the arrangements are so incredible. And you think, oh, well, And as a musician, it's like, I want to make songs that sound like that. And people go, sorry, not enough money.
Right.
That means paying a lot of musicians. Uh-huh. So I think that what happened, you know, was in, you know, the 80s and the 90s, the record companies were like, hey, wait a second, we don't have to pay all these people to make music anymore. We can just do it on computers, and we can get people that just want to be famous and they don't actually really want to earn any money from publishing. Mm-hmm. Therefore, we make all the money from the songwriting, we make all the money from the record sales because they've signed such bad contracts. Mm-hmm. And they'll do it because they just get to turn up at a award ceremony and mm-hmm. smile and get their teeth whitened for free. Mm-hmm. And that's what music became. And I think that, you know, we're pretty pissed off about it now. Mm-hmm. It's like you destroyed something.
Yeah,
but it's great because, you know what, the record companies are now all going bust, so... Back to the music.
So the Future Cut guys, is it the drum and bass guys that you're mm-hmm. using? Oh, fantastic. Oh, that. Because I was like, Future Cut. I'm like, I only know one Future Cut. And it's a unique name, so it must be the same ones. I'm really impressed with them.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they were, you know, really struggling at the time that I started working with them. Mm-hmm. They were like, what? So they weren't getting any work anymore, and, you know, they couldn't afford to live in London, so they're living in Manchester and working.
That's where they're from, aren't they?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, one of them's from there, the other one's from London, but, and then, you know, they met me, and, you know, we were working together for, like, 2 years, and we still didn't get signed.
What kind of, same type of music?
It was, like, Smile was the first song that we wrote, which is the big single, mm-hmm. and, you know, we worked together for, like, 2 years, and then suddenly I got signed, and Smile went to number one, and they were like, oh, actually, maybe I'll quit at this.
That's cool.
Yeah, no, they're like my brothers, so. Very good.
Because drum bass production is so fantastic and layered and intricate and everything, but unfortunately most of the producers don't seem to be able to take that and kind of make it
way.
Into something that makes it a little bit, yeah, do it another way that maybe makes them a little bit more money, because I think all of them are getting a little bit frustrated with all the time they spend in the studio and very little return financially on it.
Mm.
So it's like, nobody's going to keep up the drum.
Yeah,
I love it. It's just like, maybe you want to take all that talent and knowledge and kind of just do something, one little thing different, then you go back to doing that. So that's kind of great for those. I'm impressed. But there's a lot of different, not just musical styles, but music in different eras, I think,
mm-hmm.
on the record. Is that you? Or is that them? Or is it both?
No, it's
how much musical input are you having?
I went to them with a very specific idea. I was like, you know what, this is the music that I love. I really love ska music, and I really love hip-hop and mm-hmm. soul music as well. But, you know, I don't have a soul-sounding voice, mm-hmm. and I can't rap. So it was about finding... Now, what I'm saying is, you know, I grew up in Notting Hill and Shepherd's Bush, which is a very Caribbean area,
mm-hmm.
and I grew up around ragga and reggae music and right. dub and ska, you know, and I really wanted to be black. But it was about finding the middle ground and doing something that was socially acceptable but also wasn't compromising what music I was really into. And they really got that, you know, Tootie's black and Darren's white, so it was like, you know, they understood that kind of, like, you know, not being able to get away with certain things, and I think that's why they kind of worked so well.
So what did you express to them? How did you express your very specific idea?
I used to make mixtapes of all the songs that I really love, and I just say, that's this is what I like.
That's like going something like this. With the picture saying, can you cut my hair?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, but we, you know, we'd spend hours, and, you know, it's like 2 years that we worked together. We'd spend hours just going through old samples. That's why the album is so heavily sample-based. Mm-hmm. You know, just going through old 7-inches, like old Jamaican Studio One records, mm-hmm. and, you know, all of the... two-tone stuff and everything, and just kind of, you know, taking little bits, just basically stealing and making it our own, really. But, you know, they're the musicians. I can't play any instruments. Well, that's not true. I can play guitar a bit, and I can play piano, but not well enough.
But it seems like you've got your playing background. Like, you're more of a director of what the music's going with it. Did your idea change at all as you worked with them?
Idea of how it changed. I mean, it didn't really change. I always kind of had confidence in what I was doing, but the fact that no record companies were biting
mm-hmm.
really made me feel like maybe this is actually really shit and they're all mm-hmm. doing the complete wrong thing. And I did sort of try other things that didn't work, and always kind of came back to the same.
Wow.
But, you know, after a while, I did kind of, you know, I started getting angry with them because I was like, you know, you're not doing this right. This is why no one else's future comes.
Right.
I was like, you're not doing this right. Why isn't anyone signing us? You know, this is, you know, bullshit. And then I came over here to work with Greg Kirsten and Mark Ronson, and I finished the album.
But how finished was it by the time you finished?
Well, we didn't know, really, because it's not like you, it's not like you go, right, we've got seven tracks that go on the
album. It wasn't like that.
I probably had like 50 songs to choose from, but I knew the album wasn't there yet. Didn't have all the kind of big, didn't sort of have anything I wanted to say on it, and it wasn't kind of like a journey from one end to the other. And but I had like 50 songs, and you know, the record company weren't saying that it was finished yet either. So it was, you know, I set up the MySpace and put up the demos that I'd done with Future Cut, and now suddenly it got really, really massive, and the record company started freaking out, going, you know, you need to finish this album because there's so much interest there, we can't lose out, and you know, there's time, we're only running out of time. And I was like, okay, well, I just need to get away then and go and write. So I just came to LA, worked with Broadcasting, and did a song with Alfie, and everything's just wonderful and not big. And then the day after that, I flew to, that took me 4 days to write the song. After spending 2 years writing a record. Yeah. After spending 2 years writing a record, I wrote those in 4 days, and then flew to New York and wrote Littlest Things in a day, and then came back and played into the record company. They were like, brilliant, album's done. I was like, okay.
So those were the only ones that were new. The rest of them you pretty much put on the record as it was.
Yeah.
As it was. Okay. How did you narrow it down? How did you narrow it down?
I don't know. I just listened to them all and just kind of, you know, kept cutting it down and cutting it down. It's like, you know, went from 50 to 30 songs, and then it went from 30 to 20 songs, and then it was like 20 to 10.
Are you writing the new stuff already?
No, I only ever write in the studio, so
I'm so
reliant on, you know, the people that I'm working with there. And I don't really like to write poems and just put them on top of other songs. It's not really something that I'm into. It's like,
I'm just reading this stuff that I'm noting. I only read one thing about you online because it was such a little plan that you had so much information. I was like, oh, what's this thing with your clothing?
Yeah, it's a company called New Look in the UK, and they just asked me to do a line of 6 dresses, so I did.
Cool. Just 6?
Yeah.
Was that hard?
Yeah.
Or is it stuff that you are like, I always wanted to have this dress?
No, it was like, we went through, you know, I probably had like 8 meetings, it kind of was a process, and we kind of, you know, it's not like I was sat down and do all of them, but I wanted to be a terrible artist like that, so I can't do that sort of stuff, but we went through, you know, lookbooks of like the last two years of spring summer collections, and I was like, I like that dress, I like that dress, that dress, but I'd like to swap that skirt of that dress with the top of that dress and those sleeves and that neckline, and let's do it in this print and that color. That was really fun. It was like, you know, when you go to a shop and you're like, oh, I really like that dress, but I'd like it to be a little bit longer.
That's so cool. That's so much fun. This is why I don't like shopping, because I'm like, I'm not going to find what it is in here. I'd rather go shopping when I have no idea.
Exactly. I do all my shopping when I've been a dirty stop out at my boyfriend's house and have nothing to wear the next day. I'm like, okay.
Then there's like, no, you're like, well, this is not the best fashion I'll take in.
You look like a fashion idiot walking around with stupid outfits and jeans and the heels you wore out last. Really don't
care. I know. Sometimes I pick things that I'm like, well, this looks like a fashion.
Yeah.
You know, where I'm like, I still want to look cute, but I don't want to look like a hooker tomorrow, like during the day. I did that once for 3 days straight.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I just, like, I've done so many times, and so I'm quite kind of, I have quite lack sort of self-confidence and self-esteem, so I get like really nervous when I've gone out that other people are going to think I'm a prostitute when I get on the tube and stuff. That's why I have to go and buy new clothes, so I was just pretty freaked out that they'd be like, you smell.
Yeah.
In relation to Lily sharing so many experiences in her music, I mentioned that, in my observation, kids in the UK grew up a little bit faster and had more experiences, partially because of being able to move around cities easier on public transportation. This was Lily's take.
Kids in New York are quite grown up, actually.
Probably because, again, I think it's more accessibility. Yeah, it's getting around. And like, and I was thinking, well, maybe she just had a lot of experiences early on because she could.
I think it's a, you know, a lot of experiencing. Yeah, well, my thing is, my mum, you know, had her first kid when she was 17, and worked really, really hard to, you know, put a decent roof over our heads and nice clothes on our backs and, you know, good food on our table. And she, you know, did that on her own. You know, my dad left when I was 4, and in order to succeed and all that, she wasn't there a lot, so we were kind of left to our own devices, a lot as children. And yeah, I guess people I grew up with felt, you know, also my younger brother was, he was a handful, and so was my older sister. I was definitely the kind of, like, not the good one, because I wasn't good at all, but I was kind of, I can kind of, like, I was very streetwise very early, and I think my mum just knew I was all right the whole time, so she kind of just, she didn't have to kind of check up on me, but didn't mean that I was always behaving.
Well, I was 21 going on 16. Really, but not an English 16 either, yeah. You know, like a really sheltered
system. Right.
So, you know.
No, I definitely, I mean, I think I made a decision when I was like 14. I kind of looked back and I was like, you know what, I've missed out on my childhood. I'm going to stop moaning about that, because I never felt like a kid. Like, I never had friends when I was a kid. I never had toys and played with stuff. You know, I was very much an observer. I used to kind of sit on the sofa and watch the grown-ups. I really wanted to be able to have conversations with them and learn what all their long words meant. And I made a decision when I was like 14. I was like, you know what, I missed out on my childhood, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to work really, really hard from now on, try and earn as much money as I can, and then retire when I'm 30 and have my childhood.
That's an idea.
And just like sit in the country and go on quad bikes all day. And my own paintball course.
How's the plan going?
It's really good.
Halfway there. You can do it by 30?
Yeah, I think so. I'm about to buy my first house in London. Yeah. And if the property market still keeps going as it is, then I can probably sell that and buy a mansion in the country by the time.
Where are you
going
to buy the place?
In sort of near my mum's house in Islington, but it's kind of more in Hackney.
Okay, that's really, well, not up and coming anymore, because it's already come.
It's already
up and coming. But anyway, it was up and coming for you, mid-90s?
Yeah.
Lots of stuff out there. Yeah, it's not, the public transport's only 50, still.
Very what?
Going buses going.
No, they're just opening in 2009, I think. Maybe 2010, they've got a whole East London line.
Which means the price of it
will go up.
So yeah. That's
okay.
Okay, the other thing I noticed in the things I was reading, and it was only a couple of months ago, why is there so much shit talking about it?
My stuff.
No, it just... Well, okay, keep in mind that a lot about it, she just reformed or something. Mm-hmm. So it, like, the couple of things I read is just like, oh, she said this about that person, and about that person, and that person said this, and she did that.
Yeah, I just think it's, like, if I said those, it's like, you know, if you're at the pub with your, or a bar with your girlfriend, and you're like, well, what do you think of that new Fergie tune? You're like, you know what, I really hate that. I really don't like it. That's just what I'm like, and I just talk, you know, I can talk very honest with people and talk about those things. I'm not media trained, and I didn't want to have media training. And I was 21 when I started doing interviews, and was probably a bit naive to how the press worked. And I was just being honest, like, I never said really, really bad things about people, but they were blown really massively. Question. Yeah, right. They'd go like, you know, in your opinion, who's the most overrated person in pop music? And I'd go,
so you just
get that. I guess Madonna, maybe. And they're like, how dare you insult the holy grail of music, and then all the gays hate you. So, you know, I guess I'm better at it now, but everyone talks shit about everybody. It's just when people are writing about you, that's the stuff they concentrate on.
It's just it's like, sometimes I think I've been doing this for like 15 years writing, and I just noticed that in general, when somebody's talking shit about someone else, the person they're talking shit about gets way more attention. And you're just like, well, I just gave that person some attention.
But then again, at the same time, like, I don't really believe in taking attention away from anyone else. Like, people always say, you know, if you had to compare yourself to somebody here, who is it? It's like, well, no, I'm not here to compete against other people. I'm my own person and my own entity, and this is not about anyone else or competing against anyone else. Except for now, when people have constantly compared me to other people, and I've started to kind of like believe it. Like, it's about, you know, like, I almost believe people go into a shop now and go, should I buy the Amy Winehouse CD or the Billie Eilish CD? It's like, well, I feel like people are a bit like one or the other, which is not what I felt like when I started out doing this at all.
I know that I'm not a fan of hers.
Really?
No, not really. Interesting. People ask me about that, about her a lot, and I'm just like, no, not really. She doesn't sing. But, you know, but it'll be my family, actually. The English family really loves you, the villain. It's just like, I'm sure she's going to come here soon, and then she's going to come here soon. And then all of a sudden you were here. It was just like, no, Bill Douglas was like, I guess. Okay. Yeah. Okay, like 2 minutes or what?
Yeah.
1.5.
1.5.
That's no problem. I think I have nothing around just because the other people said. You have a lot of guest appearances on other people's
stuff. But yeah. Then the thing that I like, this is all on
Wikipedia. I hate that website. It's just funny because that you're the five. I googled myself,
right,
and there was something on Wikipedia about that, like, they quoted me in Wikipedia, and I was right. Like, what's that?
Yeah.
That's the first time I ever saw Wikipedia. I didn't know what it was.
No, because I just think there's a lot of people, a lot of journalists, that's where they get their information from, and it really annoys me because people come into interviews and they're like, so, you've cultivated a discreet image for yourself.
And
I'm like,
right.
No, I haven't.
That's
fine. Also, it's like, no, I haven't. Like, why are you believing something that basically any Joe Schmo could right. just put up there, you know? It's none of it's fault. I mean, I've gained about 7 siblings, according to Wikipedia.
Oh, right, okay.
It's just so dumb, like, none of it.
Well, no, but what I like about informational stuff, and not what I like, how I use it is not so much like taking it as a given, but more like, is this true, or, you know, what is this about? And then you can tell me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the talking smack. I don't know if this is true. Mm-hmm. I'm just... ask her.
Well, I guess, I mean, it's true. I'm not going to deny those things, but it's almost what I get really upset about, and I try really hard not to get angry about those things and not read so much about myself on the internet, but it's tough.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not what people would have that people believe that I like walk into interviews going, no, I really hate this person.
Right, yeah. Which is how they're making it.
Yeah, which is not the case at all.
Yeah,
you know,
no.
Anything that I ever say is like usually a direct answer to a question about that particular person. And I guess most people are trained to say, you know what, I mean, go and talk about that. But I'm a bit like, you know, and also I kind of sometimes I really trust journalists a bit too much, you know.
Yeah.
I think when they're sitting down and having a cigarette and a drink with me, they really are my friend, and then they're not.
I mean, I've seen both sides of this, but it's just easier just not to censor yourself and then worry about it later, because otherwise then you're going to get caught.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing, is that I don't want to be like a plastic person.
Yeah.
That's not what I'm here for. You know, I want to be like Mark Bonin or Debbie Harry or Joe Strummer. I've seen my music's not anywhere near as good as other people, but someone that's real and that you can believe in when you're, you know, not sitting there going, hey, you know what, I've never had sex. I don't drink. No, of course I don't smoke. 2 months later, and now on the balcony of their hotel. And then it's rehab. It's like, okay, fine.
And I think that's why people like them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they've lined up in the middle of that. I'm
fine. Do you think I can wear this on stage tonight?
When the interview concluded, Lily was talking about what she was wearing, which was a dress over jeans. She was wondering whether that would be a good choice to wear on stage that evening. It was suggested that yes to the dress, but not to the jeans. And sadly, she said she didn't want to show her legs because she didn't want to read the unkind things people said about her body the next day. That really made me feel for her. I'm going to share the print version of this interview that ran in Venice Magazine, for which Lily did an exclusive photo shoot. You will be able to access that via the paid tier of the Pictures of Lily newsletter. The Pictures of Lily newsletter goes out every couple of weeks, and you can subscribe to it for free. For my paid subscribers, I'm posting bonus newsletters that include print-only interviews from my 34-year archive, including classic ones from the 90s with a cross-section of people from The Cure to Oasis, Blur, The Verve, Portishead, Daft Punk, and more to come. For founding members, there are additional interviews with Noel Gallagher, Damon Albarn, Richard Ashcroft, and more Daft Punk. I will link the Pictures of Lily newsletter in this podcast if you'd like to subscribe to it for free. Any paid subscriptions to the Pictures of Lily newsletter go straight to supporting the production of this always free podcast. From myself and my co-producer and editor, Lauren Schroeder, thanks for listening. And if you have a chance to subscribe or follow the podcast on any of the podcast platforms, please do so, and please rate and review. You can connect to us on picturesoflily.com, and from there you can choose your preferred podcast platform, or Instagram, or Facebook, or YouTube, or Pandora, or Amazon. You can also find the playlist for the podcast episodes on Spotify and YouTube. Thanks for listening. Pictures of Lily.